Hello, we're Wilmot Dixon, and welcome to our Building Knowledge podcast. During this episode, we're exploring biodiversity net gain, which is a very hot topic at the moment. You'll hear about some learnings from recent projects and the common barriers and opportunities that biodiversity net gain presents. I'm Tom Snee, and to discuss with me today, we're delighted to be joined by Simone Codrington and Morgan Price, who are both sustainability managers at Wilmot Dixon. Simone and Morgan, thank you very much for joining us. We're going to start with an easy question for you, Morgan, or maybe quite a hard one. What actually is biodiversity net gain?
Yeah, of course. So kind of makes sense to start off with the basics. So what is biodiversity itself? So biodiversity itself refers to the variety of plant and animal life on Earth or in a particular habitat. So then biodiversity net gain, also known as BNG, is a new requirement set out in the Environment Act. And this will become law in England in January 2024. So very soon. It's an approach to development that leaves the natural environment in a measurably better state than pre-development baselines. And within biodiversity net gain, habitats are used as a proxy to measure biodiversity losses or gains. In Wales, the planning policy is slightly different, and it's called net benefits for biodiversity. This has the same intent as biodiversity net gain, but it's measured and implemented in a slightly different way. And kind of just some of the key elements of biodiversity net gain. So it's a minimum of 10% net gain that's required. And this is calculated using the biodiversity metric. It's implemented via the planning system. So a biodiversity gain plan must be submitted alongside the planning application. And finally, habitats must be secured for at least 30 years.
Excellent. That's a really good oversight, Morgan. Thank you very much. And just to one thing, just to clarify, and probably to get out there quite early on, is that we're recording this around the end of November 2023. Obviously, the legislation around biodiversity net gain is emerging and happening very quickly. So if you have any questions that may things that may have changed over the time that we've between us recording and you listening to this podcast, it's accurate up until this point, but we'll see how it goes going forward. So if you'd like to find out about anything further about any specific projects or anything you'd like to hear about, please reach out to either Morgan or Simone, who will be introducing shortly on LinkedIn, and those guys will be able to help you wherever they can. So we'll stick with you on this one, actually, Morgan, just to start off with. But why then, I guess we've kind of touched on the idea that it's coming in, so it's going to be huge. Why is it increasingly becoming a talking point and something that needs to be legislation around?
Yeah, of course. So, there's been a biodiversity crisis in the UK and globally for quite a long time. Habitats are in decline. And obviously that means that these new requirements are coming into effect, coming in very soon in January. Our customers are going to need our support to help them deliver biodiversity net gain. And any projects that are kind of due to go into planning from now really kind of need to be thinking about biodiversity net gain and how they need to incorporate that into their plans.
Yeah, I agree. And it's also worth adding that we've actually had a couple of projects that have already delivered biodiversity net gain or are currently delivering biodiversity net gain ahead of the legislation. So we've had a variety of projects to sort of trial it on and get some experience finding ways to deliver it around different circumstances and different habitat types, etc.
Excellent. Thank you, Simone. So what does the legislation then actually do? What does it lay out and what kind of projects does it apply to? We'll go to you with this one, Morgan.
Yeah, of course. So kind of as I mentioned previously, biodiversity net gain set out in the Environment Act, and that will become a legal requirement as of January. So any land that's used for development must be left in a better state than it was beforehand, by increasing kind of habitat areas by at least 10%. So it's a planning requirement for new developments. So essentially anything going through planning that will have an impact on biodiversity will be impacted by the new biodiversity net gain requirements. It's needed for almost all sites. There is a different metric for smaller sites. And there are also some very specific exemptions, but they're quite niche and they won't apply to the majority of projects. So it's safer to assume that it will apply to your project.
But basically get biodiversity net gain in there unless you're told specifically not to. Simone, one for you now. So I'm trying to understand the options for how people can get to biodiversity net gains. I'm right in thinking there's sort of three different ways to deliver it, right?
Yes, that is right. So you can deliver it on-site, off-site, or through statutory credits. So it's worth noting that there's two different hierarchies that need to be followed when delivering it. So there's the mitigation hierarchy, which is avoid, mitigate, and compensate for any biodiversity loss. And then there's the actual delivery hierarchy. So on-site is the priority, then off-site, then through the statutory credits. So obviously on-site is the preference because that means you're actually delivering that net gain where the biodiversity already exists. So it's going to have the lowest impact on the biodiversity. Then if you're unable to deliver it on-site, then you're going to need to be able to justify why you're not delivering it on-site in that planning, in the planning documents. And then you've got the other two options for delivering it. So off-site is maybe talking with a local landowner, or if you've already got some of your own existing space to try and achieve that net gain. So making sure that you're replacing those habitats that need to be replaced, that you are, you know, maybe removing. And then it's also worth mentioning the spatial risk multiplier, which is a bit of a mouthful. but this is essentially just the preference for delivering that net gain in the local authority. So, you know, it's trying to encourage people to try and deliver where the habitats are going to be lost, and having sort of a commercial implication so that people are more likely to actually follow that hierarchy. And obviously it's also great to keep the biodiversity in the local area for nature. And then there is the statutory credits route. So this is just paying a rather substantial chunk of money into a big pot, which then would be used for delivering biodiversity net gain anywhere in the country, really. So that is why that is the lowest preference, just because it's, you know, it's not local and it's not going to have the same impact as it would for the local area as the on-site options.
Yeah, I think it's worth adding to that as well. You know, there's no textbook way of delivering biodiversity net gain. It all depends on the landscape you start with the land you're developing. So each site will be bespoke. So for example, if you start with a brownfield site, you're kind of less likely to require as many interventions to compared to if you're kind of starting with a greenfield site. So just some examples of the kind of things that you could enhance on site that could contribute to a biodiversity net gain. So you've got things like wildflower beds, ponds, native hedgerows, wildlife corridors, woodland planting, and even things like green roofs. They all contribute to biodiversity net gain. So many sites will be relatively kind of standard and quite simple, but there can be added complexities on certain sites which have hard to replace habitats. So within biodiversity net gain, habitats have to be replaced with new habitats of either the same or higher value. So, you know, if you've got those really high value habitats on site, you may have trouble replacing them. And obviously all of this can sound very daunting, but ultimately it's not as scary as it sounds. And if you have the right partner to kind of deliver it with you, then that makes it even easier.
Yeah, absolutely. It does sound like it could potentially be a little daunting. So how do people go about getting started when they've got a project at the stage that they're considering biodiversity net gain and how that's going to impact it? How do they get started?
Well, with a slightly biased opinion, we would always say you should engage with a contractor early, because then, you know, you're going to be able to look at all of the options, making sure that your design and your budget is going to be incorporating opportunities for biodiversity net gain, using existing surveys to ensure that biodiversity net gain is going to be achieved and not affected by any design changes throughout the process, and thinking about that mitigation hierarchy. So avoid and then mitigate and compensate where you can. That would probably be the best sort of initial steps.
That's good insight there, Simone, and certainly something to be thinking about going forward. So you mentioned there's a couple of projects that you're already working on that have kind of been working towards biodiversity net gain. Morgan, have you got an example of one of those that we could potentially talk about here?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of our projects that was delivered by our interiors business was in Portslade in Brighton and Hove. So it was quite a rare opportunity for our interiors business to work with outside space. It was a refurb project. So it was turning a former school into council offices. And some of the things that the team added as part of the biodiversity net gain was a new pond and a native wildflower bed. And they ended up achieving a biodiversity net gain of 39%. So a really good gain. And we kind of managed to make the biodiversity net gain requirements work for the customer and deliver on strategic priorities by delivering a quiet well-being space within the grounds for the council social workers to use. So yeah, really nice example of how biodiversity can work for everyone, for the environment and the end user.
We also have a current project that's underway in Nottingham, which is the Broadmarsh project. So I should definitely caveat this by saying that this project is, like I said, it's on site, so it's not finished. So the biodiversity net gain has not been achieved. But this is an example of a project that, again, it can be delivered in a really strategic way because it's going to be playing a key role in the urban regeneration of Nottingham. Is going to be connecting lots of different areas and new developments, is going to be fully pedestrianized and, you know, incorporating green spaces into the heart of the city and to try and, you know, really help people understand the value of it and, you know, provide a bit of a nature haven, I guess, in the city centre for the community to enjoy. So, yeah, I think that's going to be a really, really great outcome once that net gain is achieved.
As a Nottingham lad myself, I'm very excited to see how the Broadmarsh project moves forward. So we've got a few kind of frequently asked questions that have come in. Obviously, as you mentioned earlier, it's a moving topic at the moment, and one that's very, very hot on people's lips. We're going to fire a few of these at you, so you know, feel free to give me a wave and tap out if we need to. But we'll go to you with this one first, Morgan. So we've heard about 30-year management plans. What exactly are 30-year management plans?
Yeah, so as I mentioned before, habitats must be secured for at least 30 years. So any biodiversity net gain enhancements that are made on site must be maintained for 30 years. And this is secured via either planning obligations or conservation covenants. And ultimately, it's the responsibility of the landowner to kind of comply with that management plan and make sure that, you know, the habitats are kept well.
Brilliant. Thank you. So, and also one of these things that's coming up here, as sure as there ever is with any system that's coming in, there's going to be people that kind of try and find their way around it and how we can maybe bank some improvements for future. So one for you here, Simone. Can you, if you're making kind of incremental improvements to biodiversity net gain over time, can you like sort of bank those and then use them for future developments?
As far as we're aware, that isn't possible, no, because it will be through planning and, you know, specific developments. So maybe as part of a phased development, but it won't be possible as separate projects unless they are, you know, actually going through the planning system.
I suppose it defeats the purpose of biodiversity net gain as well, to then sort of bank those and move it elsewhere. It's not quite how it's supposed to work.
Yeah.
One for you now, Morgan. So how does biodiversity net gain, how does it apply? Does it apply across everything? We talked about specific potential exemptions, but does it apply across new builds? Is it retrofit as well? Is it refurbishments as well?
Yeah, so as you kind of saw in the project I spoke about earlier, that was a refurb, and although the biodiversity net gain hadn't come into effect yet, that was a project we did that on. But it's quite a simple answer, really. So if your project is going through planning and if it's having an impact on biodiversity or the environment, it's very likely. So yeah, best to assume that it is.
Assume it is until we know otherwise. We'll wrap up our FAQs with one for you, Simone. So is this kind of 10% that's been talked about, is 10% buying diversity net gain the maximum that a project's going to be asked to deliver, or could that be varied?
So we have known in the past different projects in different planning authorities, they have actually asked for higher than 10%. So it's definitely possible that more than 10% will be required. And 10% is just the minimum with the new legislation coming in. It is also worth thinking about the fact that, you know, we're in a biodiversity crisis. So it's very likely that in the future that this 10% will increase in, you know, for legislation, not just for local authorities. So yes, you know, for the benefits of biodiversity, then more than 10% is definitely better.
Aim high, why not? Brilliant, thank you very much, guys. Just a caveat, as we mentioned earlier, but just if you're only catching the end of this this podcast, we are recording at the end of November 2023. All information that's been provided today is accurate at the time of recording, but obviously with all legislation, this is subject to change and may well develop over time. If you'd like to speak to either of the guys about specific projects or any questions that you have, feel free to reach out to them on LinkedIn, and they'll definitely help wherever they can. So that's been our quick overview of biodiversity net gain. We've kind of had a bit of a whistle stop tour through it, but hopefully you found that episode informative. So thank you very much to Simone and Morgan for your time. Thank you to you guys for tuning in, and we're looking forward to welcoming you back for the next episode.